This is Gene Roddenberry.
And Bill Shatner.
In a conversation I guess we've never had before, Bill, there are some questions I've been wanting to ask you for about 10 years. One of them is, how much of Bill Shatner is Captain Kirk?
Well, Gene, the act of putting on a television show, a television series, is such a back-breaking, all-encompassing task. The hours we put in are so enormous that to be able to make up a character and sustain that for the years that we did it would be impossible, I think, for anyone, but certainly impossible for me. So What essentially comes out is William Shatner himself, as himself, saying the lines that were written for me to say in a situation that I was placed in. I think that the people you see on television playing leads in television series, that's what they're like. When people ask, what is so-and-so really like, the lead on a television show, what you're seeing is what you're getting.
How did Captain Kirk, the character, the strong, the usually wise commander of the vessel, how much did that influence you and your personality?
I don't think that I carried home any of the characteristics of Captain Kirk, other than, as I've just said, those characteristics were me. But the wisdom and the sagacity and the courage that Captain Kirk evidenced in the play of the week was written as fiction. And I often wish that I could be able to do that in my own personal life, but fallible me is fallible me.
Let me ask you a tough one that I've certainly got a lot of questions on. And fans talk about rumors of trouble on stage, and very often the subject of you and Leonard Nimoy come up, that they wouldn't speak to each other, that there were great problems on stage. How would you address yourself to that?
Well,
we can cut this out of the recording if you'd like.
No. I really love Leonard. I really care for him a great deal. He's a very fine human being. He stands behind what he says with his total character, and when he says something, he really means it. I mean, you can take him at his word. He is slyly humorous and very affectionate in his own way that is remarkable. And to address myself to the elements of friction on the stage, I would put it in the way that two children in the same family might squabble over something. Loving each other, but squabbling. I mean, any member of a family would know what I mean, and that means all of us. If you can say, no, I don't think that's right, in that querulous tone, and be angry at the moment, and then forget it the following moment because you care for that person. The questions that I get apropos of the show frequently is, what were the various elements in the difference in the show between the first, second, and third seasons? And especially the third season, when it's indicated that you pulled out and left the show more or less to run on its own. The question I get is, why?
I had been told by the network that we would get a 7:30 time slot early in the week. And I said, on that basis, I'll come back and become line producer by the time we'd lost Gene Kuhn, who we all admired, and I would line produce the show. Then they put us last moment into Friday night at 10, and I told them that, using the only leverage I had, that if they did that, I would not produce a show as promised. And I couldn't get them to back down, and I felt at the time I had to stick by my statement, since I would have to bargain with them again at other times. I think there was a little rationalization in that on my part, and I've never said this before from a platform or any other way. I think also what was affecting me at that time was enormous fatigue. I think maybe I was looking for an excuse to get out from under the fight that I had not just been having for 2 years, but for four.
Right.
As you recall, we'd made first pilot, turned down a second pilot, and then 2 years of production. So I think there was some rationalization there. I think the fatigue had just caught up.
If you had it to do over, what would you do? And also, how would you fight that element of fatigue?
I think I would come back and produce it the third year myself if I had it to do over. I'm not taking a backhanded slap at the people who did produce it the third year, who line produced it, because obviously when you bring a producer in and you're going to let him produce it, you've got to let him do it his way, and I think his way or their way was somewhat different than our way the first two, so it did look different. If we went back and did Star Trek on television over again. What things in it would you like to see changed?
Well, I think we had the right combination when there was an underlying meaning in the show.
Mm-hmm. A premise in
the premise script. Upon which was based an action-adventure story, which was entertaining. And the action-adventure was based on a real kind of human situation whereby our family of characters were involved in a very human way so that it elicited emotional responses from all of us, which solved the problem in an active way. And there was a resolution to the premise as well. Those were our best shows. And when we varied from that, we made some mistakes, I think.
Mm-hmm. I think one fan comment we got during the third year quite often was, how come Captain Kirk gets a new girl every week?
Well, he uses up the old one.
Boys will be boys. You know, Bill Shatner was often teased on the set about Captain Kirk's many romantic conquests. Well, I can assure you, Lieutenant Uhura was not one of them. Not that he didn't try. In Plato's Stepchildren, what became the first interracial kiss on television was originally written for Spock and Uhura. But Bill said, if anyone's going to get to kiss Nichelle, it's going to be me. I mean, Captain Kirk. Well, we all laughed about it, but Bill prevailed. And that's as far as any romance ever went, on or off the set. One of the many striking features about the series was its vast array of sound effects. In the course of their conversation that follows, Gene brings up the subject and quizzes Captain Kirk. Bill.
Bill, I'm going to order some sound effects and see if you remember what they are.
All right. Oh, I remember that one.
We're aboard the U.S. Enterprise.
Hey, there's my chair. I'm going to sit on it. Hold on a second, Jim.
Okay, you're there.
It still
fits. The bridge is around you.
Yes.
You are Captain Kirk.
I am Captain Kirk.
We've gone back to the 20th century, and you're Captain Kirk with this incredible power at your disposal.
Yes.
We have a world down there that Roddenberry and Shatner live on, which is unfair, intolerable, full of violence, bias, and so on.
Yes.
What would you as Captain Kirk do to change this?
Let them suffer. I mean it. If they can't work out their problems, if Captain Kirk and the Enterprise has to solve their problems, we'll have to make frequent visits. Seriously. I think that the theory of non-interference, which is stated time to time in the Enterprise moving to new worlds, we must not interfere, is the anthropologist's credo of non-interference with life forms that they're observing. It's essential that some other life form, if it wants to keep the continuity of the life form that they're observing, not interfere.
20th century must solve its own problems.
That's right.
Sitting there saying that, I have to respond by saying, really, you are Captain Kirk.
You better believe it, Gene Roddenberry. And now, get off my bridge.
Scotty, ahead. Warp factor one.